Radio Cavalier, your anarchist radio.
So hello and welcome to Radio Cavalier.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Santeria.
And I'm Mitchell.
And this is Radio Cavalier for the month of April.
What have we got?
Well, today we've got loads of stuff. Well, bits of stuff at least. We have an interview with somebody about the drone conference from Bristol Against the Arms Trade. We're going to have an interview as well with Amy Miller from Wide Open Exposure about their new film about called Carbon Rush. It's all about carbon trading and why it's bad.
Yes. Also, Moscow ADC. I've been talking to them about that Antifa Nikita who was murdered. And I'll be chatting to them anyway about the situation there and what's been happening like with Nikita's family and stuff like that. So it's been really cool to just touch face.
There's also this fantastic exhibit up at Cabela at the minute from the of all kinds of different posters from the People's History Collection from the Just Seeds Collective in the United States. So come and give it a check. Check it out. Yes, have a look. Just come and check out the artwork. So it's looking good. Yeah, should we crack on? So now we're going to go to a word from our quote-unquote sponsors. April 15th, among other things, is Steal Something from Work or potentially the Job Centre Day. So here's a little plug for that.
If one were to take all of the wealth inside of the United States and divide it by the amount of people, it would come out to something like $150,000 each. Now, I'm a pretty hardworking person, so is my family, and we've never seen that kind of money. That's because we spend our lives working for employers who keep most of the profits of our labor for themselves. My boss works half as hard as I do, and he makes twice as much. And who knows how much his boss makes. Every day I get up and I break my back to make these people rich. But today is different. It's Steal Something from Work Day. I don't expect to see my $150,000. That anything short of a revolution. The wages they pay us, it's highway robbery. The least an honest person can do is take back a little of what we've earned.
Bring it out.
I share things with my friends.
Take cash from the register.
If a coworker needs something, look the other way.
Taking out the trash used to be humiliating.
Until I found out about Steal Something from Work Day.
Steal something?
I got a color printer.
I got a paper clip.
I gave all my friends free lattes.
I'm gonna throw a party for the whole neighborhood.
Next time your manager turns their back, show them who's boss.
No one.
Just remember, you're not stealing from your work. You're stealing from your family.
Busy bees.
That's awesome. And we're not talking pens, people.
Well, I think in one of the ads I saw, it said ads, you know, promotional videos. It was about stealing paper clips even.
Oh, man, come on.
Some people start small.
Anyway.
So now we're going to go to a song by Witch Hunt, who are an amazing female-fronted punk band from Philadelphia, also in the United States. And this song's called Desperation.
We'll be right back.
Okay, well, that was Witch Hunt. Aren't they amazing? Check out their music. Maybe not everybody likes them, so we apologize for the punk. I should have given a warning beforehand about that. Yes, punk warning.
So we've got the news?
Yeah, we've got the news. Got lots of stuff. Okay. Let's go to local updates.
Okie doke. The criminalisation of squatting in residential buildings represents a persecution of the homeless and vulnerable population of Britain. It creates a costly mess that will burden the taxpayer, while the problems of homelessness, overcrowding and housing is a crisis in general. It will burden taxpayers with an additional bill in an already critical economic situation. The politicians ignored the responses to the consultation concerning squatting. People might remember a little while ago there was, what's it called, like a questionnaire that you could do online that Squattastic had like a little campaign around, and you know, time and time again people were saying that they didn't want the bill to go through and it wasn't an issue, and so few people were actually saying that they were concerned about squatting on a like real like level. They're saying now that 96% of respondents were in favour of no change to the legal rights of squatters, and so they're still changing it. Surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to totally change the culture of squatting in the UK, and I come from a country that where squatting is illegal and people still squat, and obviously there are many countries in Europe where there are thriving squatting cultures and it is illegal. And I think that the stuff around when we're talking around like laws changing and people doing things because it's legal versus not doing something because it's illegal, I think then we start to get into that whole like, well, you know, is it something that we actually want to do, or are we just doing it because we're legally able to and we can be protected by the law, but then the law can just sort of turn on us whenever we want, and you know, we should be acting independently of the law to do what's right in the first place. So I sort of feel like it's shit that it's going to be, well, of course it's going to be shit for people who are homeless and people who rely on this law to actually have shelter, and you know, it's going to be a fucking mess for housing. But people who are choosing, who are in the privileged position to choose to squat, you know, there's no reason for you to not continue to squat, and I think it just means that communities have to come together. It does mean that like clashes will be bigger, and we have to sort of network a bit more and maybe build up a bit more of a resistance to police and other people who might be trying to like get into houses. Or it does say residential buildings. I did a bit of research around that, and I'm not 100% sure of what precisely, and I don't think anyone really knows what precisely a residential building is, whether it's just like any building with a toilet or with water or whatever. So you know, there might even be some loopholes in that thing. But yeah, that's kind of what's going on. There's a couple of demos and things going on as well around that, and a few people are getting together, putting
their
noggins together.
Yeah, and we will, there's a demo, I guess we'll maybe mention it at the end as well, but April 14th, it's a Saturday, meet at Metropolis in Stokescroft at 1 p.m. for March Against the Criminalisation of Squatting.
Yes.
Be there or be square.
Also, we've got, people also may have heard around, there's a group in Bristol that do a lot of work around, like, genetically modified foods, and how they don't want them and how they're really shit. And there's some testing going on at the moment, just outside of London, to do with wheat. Do you know those?
I've just seen some flyers.
With the cow.
Yeah, and bread.
Yeah.
A bread cow.
You'll
know it when you see it.
So there's testing going on, and this group is opposing the testing because it's a genetically modified strain of wheat, which has the genetics within it are more similar to a cow than to wheat. And we're at this point where the testing means that if it goes through and is like starts to go into the wind, what's that word called?
Pollute.
No, the good one. That nature does.
Oh, fertilize.
Is it?
Maybe.
I can't remember. Pollinate. You know, once the crops get to that point where they can pollinate, then that means it's unstoppable, that the genetics are just flying all over the place and it's going to infect, you know, loads of stuff, and then we're done. And I was reading something to do with like rapeseed, maybe you know about this in Canada, that there's no like organic rapeseed left because it's all being crushed by genetically modified rapeseed that they introduced in the 90s.
I believe that because there was less of a movement against GM in Canada because because Monsanto's so strong and there was no movement, and we also didn't have the same crisis around mad cow or Creutzfeldt-Jakob's or however you say that disease and things. So Yeah, so there wasn't really much movement against GM when it first came in, and it was sort of conveniently overlooked by the media as well, and it was not really seen as an issue. And foods do not need to be labeled as genetically modified. And as like a vegetarian or a vegan in North America, you know that most of the soy, most of the rapeseed oil, most of those kinds of things that you'll be eating as a vegetarian are genetically modified. So you know that. Unless I think you buy organic, get organic food, maybe you know that it's not genetically modified. But even then, it's a big maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well that's shit.
Yeah, it sucks.
So people are being pretty good in England about like contaminating, in a good way, I should say, destroying crops and like taking a lot of direct action to stop this. I'm just going to read a very small sentence from the website, which says that. About the action that they're proposing in May. So it says, this open-air trial poses a real serious and imminent contamination threat to the local environment and the UK wheat industry. They say that they're calling on the government and the local community to remove the GM plants themselves, but if they fail to do so, then May 27th is the last weekend action can safely be taken before pollination. They say that they'd rather not clean it up, but there simply aren't any other avenues open to the community. So, all right. Yeah. Basically, classic.
Yeah.
People aren't doing it, so people are stepping up, and they're going to do it. So,
exactly.
Cool. It's probably going to be really fun. I think I'm going to go.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah. So that's what's happening. So check them out as well, but I'll talk a bit more about them at the end as well.
Okay. Cool. So March 31st in Cardiff, there was a noise demo at the prison there. The demo was done to show their support with the prisoners and also to raise awareness about IPP sentencing, basically because they said it destroys lives and the local community. So if you don't know about IPP, look it up because it's quite it's a disturbing way of basically indefinitely sentencing people. World news! World news. Okay, so Greece, how can we not talk about Greece? So much going on. In Greece, protests continued for a couple of days last week after a retired pharmacist shot and killed himself near the parliament buildings after writing a note that blamed his suicide on the economic crisis. So last week, police fired tear gas and flash grenades at protesters in Syntagma Square on Thursday near the site of the suicide, under the tree where Dimitris Christolas, shot himself. Many people left messages saying the government's harsh austerity policies were to blame for his death. Which, how true is that? Because poverty is violence, so, you know, meh. And also on a related note, slightly more upbeat as well, you can look up some videos of this on YouTube. I actually found this on the BBC website, though. Shocking. But there's a newscaster in Greece was covered in, quote-unquote, supposedly eggs and yogurt.
Yes, I saw this too. Yes.
It just, you know, makes for a good Sunday morning. Eggs and yogurt by protesters who broke into the TV studio. Their faces were hidden. Apparently there were 17 of them, and when they went to carry out this action, they went to carry out the action because the presenter had invited an openly neo-Nazi party onto his show the previous week.
Yeah, called Golden Dawn.
Yeah, what's up with that? But apparently, nobody else in the studio came to his help. They just sort of let him stand there and get egged and yogurted. Yeah, totally. However, if you do come into the Radio Cabelli studios, if you want to use soy yogurt or something to throw on us,
you want to put it in a little cup.
Yeah, we might eat it. Yeah, totally. Just a little request there. Okay, so in Quebec, in Canada, the Quebec student strike continues as thousands of students and others have repeatedly taken to the streets to protest the hike. Tuition fees will go from $2,890 to $4,700 a year. How much is that in real British money? That's £1,825 to £2,969. So, I mean, it's not a race to the bottom, guys. Don't feel bad. It just sucks here as well. And so over 300,000 students are now on strike and have vowed to have a campaign of economic disruption. Noam Chomsky, who I'm not into making heroes of people, but I thought this was a smart comment that he made. He said that he sent a letter to some Montreal University students saying, high tuition fees are not an economic necessity, as is easy to show. But a debt trap is a good technique of indoctrination and control. I thought that was quite insightful on his part. But he's a smart cookie, even though we don't have heroes or anything. So, no. So, yeah. So going on in the news, in Lublin in Poland, a solidarity action for political prisoners was taken. This is from the 325 website. So in the last days of March, we attacked with paint 3 ATMs, each belonging to another bank. The growing climate of state repression must meet with our overwhelming response, an uncompromising attack of on capital, taking away from us the remaining social gains can no longer go unanswered. And this was dedicated to the prosecuted fighters of the revolutionary struggle, the conspiracy of the Cells of Fire, Comrade Tortuga, Eaton Billy in Indonesia, Stella Antonio, and other political prisoners from around the world. And in Italy, on March 25th, an anti-TAV sabotage in Milan took place in Italy. Four boxes containing the electric control units of the Lambrate Rigoletto, sorry, massacre Italian, that line were set on fire in the night. One got completely burnt, causing a huge disruption on the Milan-Genoa and Milan-Bologna lines. No TAV graffiti was left around the area. Since then, there's been a massive campaign, and probably before then as well, but there's been a massive campaign against the TAV, but also quite a big response from the state with assaults on people, imprisonments, and raids.
Yeah.
Bad. So...
And those trains were going to ski resorts. That was the line that they were like...
Really?
Yeah.
So dude.
It disrupted like 10,000 people or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, well, they can sit and drink lattes in the train station then instead.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, right, fucking good action.
Yeah.
Sneaky. Yeah.
Indeed. So now we're going to go to the song. Forgive me. Jumping the gun.
Also in world news, I just read this. It was an Australian prison riot. You don't read about them every day. So a riot broke out on January 18th at Fulham Correctional Centre in Sale, east of Melbourne in Australia. About 30 prisoners managed to sabotage prison equipment, including setting fire to rubbish bins. Arming themselves with gym equipment and gardening tools, they succeeded in climbing onto a roof of the jail and stayed there for about 12 hours. The prison was locked down for 3 days. Police used tear gas in an attempt to get the prisoners off the roof. The authorities at the medium security prison had imposed new regulations, including stricter uniform rules and the scrapping of pay television. Robert Hastings, who is an ex-cop and the current Corrections Victoria Commissioner, said, "What we have here is a group of young males who decided that they would be disruptive and destructive and wouldn't comply with what the prison authorities wanted to do." Fulham Prison was built to accommodate 650 prisoners, but now 840 people are in jail there. So, yeah.
Oh, so massively overcrowded, and they wonder.
Yeah, they didn't want to do what the authorities wanted to do, them to do.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Damn.
Speechless.
Silly prisoners.
Yeah.
So that's fucking rad. Go Australia. Nice one. I think that's all the news we've got.
Great. Okay, so now we're going to go to some music. We're going to go to the song...
Which one?
Yacht?
Ah, yeah, we're going to go to Yacht, which is an American band. But I really like the line in this. There's a bit where they say... And it's something about like coming home, that you walk in your house and all your dishes say, "We're gonna make a cake for you."
Dude, my dishes say that to me quite often, to be honest with you.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I like that. I like the concept of that. So yes, this is Yacht with Psychic City.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm just here with someone from the Antifa scene in Moscow. We're going to do an interview and talk about what's happening in Moscow and Russia in relation to fascism, and also about Nikita, who was recently murdered by fascists within the last sort of month. So, yeah, if you want to just get started.
So, at first, militant anti-fascist movement was very closed. And it was hard to be inside if you don't want to, if you don't know people inside of it. But after it grew up, and it began to work with different social initiatives, human rights initiative, also with some leftist anarchist initiative, and now anti-fascist movement in Russia is very different. Of course, there was some leaders. Always, because it was militant stuff, of course it was a little bit more machist, and who have more power, have more respect from others, because who are fight better,
yeah.
Have respect. No, we must understand that this is like some war shit. And, but also some women joined to an anti-fascist movement, and also some women took part in violent action. But
yeah.
I want to tell that it was maybe two or three girls who was ready to fight and like to fight, because of course it's this machist stuff. So it still exists some people who respect only violence and interested only in violence on the street. Exist some groups who interested in propaganda, in making videos, making web page, making. Exist some groups who interested in infrastructure, like to create social centers, to create seminars, make some cultural stuff.
Yeah.
And exist some groups who are interested in juridical stuff, because after it, when the anti-fascist movement grew up, police also grew up in this question. They create special I don't know how it's, they divide one part of policemen and create anti-extremist police. It's like something like political police, because they protect only Putin regime, and they are looking for every extremist. They don't care who is a right-wing extremist or left-wing extremist. So they say that all everybody who not for Putin, they are extremists. If you are Nazi, you are extremist. If you are anti-fascist, you are extremist.
Yeah.
So all extremists must be in prison. And they began to look for the people, cage them, beat them, and make some brutal and crazy stuff. And sometimes arrest people and make fake cases on them. And now the biggest problem of anti-fascist movement is, I think, not Nazis, how policemen.
Yeah.
Because Nazis are still exist and still dangerous because they can go and kill people like it was with Nikita.
Yes, exactly.
And also not only with Nikita, but most of these Nazis who want to fight with anti-fascists and kill them, they have a good contact with policemen.
Mm.
Also, some of policemen are Nazis.
Yeah.
Also, exactly. Some Nazis go to work to policemen. So I think it's practice of all countries.
Mm. Yes.
State. And of course, Nikita was killed by Nazis because his own attitudes, but not only because of his own attitudes, it's also because of the stupidness of Nazis.
Mm.
Because you need to be very crazy to go and kill people who make some social activity and some social work. And some of the structures, some of the Nazis, they choose different ways, because some of the Nazis, they began to have a friendship with Kremlin and with Putin regime.
Yeah.
It was, for example, DPNA. It's a movement movement against illegal immigration. They try to play card of the like good Nazis, like we are like a human right Nazis. So they want to tell they was fucking stupid populists. They say we just only against illegal immigration.
Yeah.
If it's legal, all okay. But in reality, they collect small Nazis, small boneheads near their organization. But they make manifestations. They make Kreml give to them a lot of money, and they get and they take this money and they create a lot of I don't know how it's called, a lot of cells.
Yeah.
Cells in every city, and they was very strong when they get money from Kreml, but. After this, the leader of this movement, he became very Nazis always loved the power. He began to think that he very rude because he have a big organization and make a conflict with Kreml and make a Russian march against Kreml and against Putin regime, and Kreml stopped to pay for him money, and this organization died in, I think, in a half of a year.
Okay.
Because without foundation, they can't, because most of people who work there and do something, do it for money, not for ideas. But they create a fake case, like the people are members of a criminal organization, the anarchy skinheads, and they create fake documents with the of the, like these people have documents of this organization, and so they make a fake some fairy tale about a group and try to tell that some famous anti-fascists from Nizhny Novgorod are members of this group.
Okay.
And this group never was exist in reality, so nobody create, and it's very stupid to make a document for yourself that you are a member of anti-fascist movement.
Yeah, exactly.
Make a document, but they show these documents with photos which they take from the videos when they shoot, when the
yep.
special police shoot on the meetings,
mm-hmm.
And they cut the photos of these people and make the documents.
All right.
This guy with photo, I'm a member of the organization. I say, look, they have these documents.
Yeah.
So it's a totally crazy stuff.
That is crazy. Is that like, obviously that's quite common with the police, you know, you would expect that. Can you tell me about how the police have like covered up or trying to forget, or you've said that they're the cops are treating it more like hooliganism with Nikita than a nationalistic?
Yeah. Because yes, for cops it's always like this, because if cops will make a case that it's a killing because of nationalism, it will be big shame.
Yeah.
You know, the Russia, they defeat fascism in Second World War, blah, 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 official state propaganda. And after it, we know that the nationalists who made Sieg Heil and Heil Hitler began to kill anti-fascists. They can't do this. And they have, and the police make it like hooliganism. And they do it always. It was also with Nikita, and the... about Nikita's murder, Nikita was the social activist, he was anarchist by his own opinion, he was active in different social movements, and in internet, he makes some propaganda in social webs, like Facebook, something. Some Nazis write to him from his city that they will find and kill him and blah, 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 because he is a stupid Russophobe or something like this, because he don't support Nazis.
Yeah.
And in one day they find him and he get 61 stabbed by knife.
Yeah.
So they kill him specially. One time it was shooting at my, somebody shoot at from the gun, from to the window of the place where I lived.
Yeah.
But I wasn't at home, and there was my young brother. He's 3 years old, younger me. He's like 23 now.
Mm.
And he just was inside, and the bullet was very near with his head.
Yeah.
And it goes through the... because Nazis maybe... And after police come, they arrest my brother, beat my brother. Where your brother... But I leave country at that moment and go to live to Ukraine.
Do you know much about the person who's been arrested for Nikita's murder?
Yes, this is... I don't know a lot about this person, but how it looks, he's also... After anti-fascist movement was created, it was a lot of people who don't like anti-fascist movement. For example, anti-Antifa.
Yeah.
They create, these people, they just interesting, they are homophobic and they are sexist, and they always say, look, anti-fascist protect homosexualists, anti-fascist protect lesbians, we must attack anti-fascist because of it, or like, anti-fascist not Christians, so we must attack anti-fascist.
Yeah.
So, something like this. They have no... any ideology, just hate to people who call themselves anti-fascists. It's very stupid.
So now we've got a in-studio interview with John Williams from Bristol Against the Arms Trade. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hey.
Not good to be back.
And it's good to have you back as well.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
So we're going to just be chatting about the drone conference / demo that happened. Can you start off by telling us a bit about, like, what the conference was about and what drones are doing?
Drones or unmanned aerial vehicles, as they're technically known, and obviously the technical side of it would like them to be called that, but the colloquial name is drones. And in Bristol, there's the 27th, or we found out about it, the 27th annual UAV conference, which used to be hosted by Bristol University, but for whatever reason, they've offloaded that responsibility to a sort of private company. Well, they set up a private company to do the university. We found out that they were having this conference. You may or may not know, drones are used around the world, and at the moment 98% are used for military purposes.
What are their other purposes?
There's quite a variety. I mean, I think Greenpeace have got one, of course, which the people who are producing these things like to think that's all they do, but they can be used for surveying, as in like your oil exploration, or mapping things. They use them for border control in Texas and Mexico, American border, Canadian, US border, and in South America they use them a lot.
Mainly killing machines.
That's because they were. Their origins are the military, really, but the growth of it is in the civilian area, really. I mean, massive expenditure. It's going to be up to $6 billion, I think, in the US in about 3 or 4 years, and that their number of drones they've got, militarised drones, is nearly exceeding the number of ordinary fighter planes.
Well, I think they're often criticised as well as being a way that somebody can sort of somebody who obviously worked for the military can sort of drive up to somewhere in the United States, a base, a military base, go to work, almost equivalent to playing video games, you know, bomb places in other countries, and then drive home at night. And so sort of like quite a distance relationship from actually, you know, the end result of what you're carrying out, which is bombing civilian people, bombing supposedly enemy combatants and, you know, enemy fighters and things. So it's sort of... it's been one of the things that's been quite criticised. And there's been lots of actions in the United States, I think, against them. There's been some major trials of people, you know, some sort of peacenicky people going into bases to try and challenge what's going on. And also other people have just sort of taken some actions against them as well, I think.
It's been that's brilliant. It's, bringing attention to that, really. As well, as you say, it's sort of the cutting edge of the ethics of warfare, really.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, you say, the way they're operated in maybe the Nevada desert, and they're flown and in also the military areas in Afghanistan, and leads to this more of a propensity towards war because it becomes easier.
Mm-hmm.
But also if they're flying them in countries where there isn't a designated war, for example, Pakistan, and there is a lot of different views about how many civilians have been killed. It's definitely about 4,000 people.
Yeah.
From either 80% to 30% of civilians. It's not clear.
Mm-hmm. Certainly there's just, you know, we've moved entirely away. Like, you know, civilian death as a byproduct of war seems just not to be a concern at all anymore.
No,
it's just like blind shooting and bombing and fucking, like, you know, once upon a time the kids. You know, that are running away from bombs in villages whose clothing have been, like, burnt off their bodies. Like, that was an image that was, like, shock. And now it's just, like, fucking, well, that's the reality of pretty much every bomb that's dropped. Or, you know, anyone who has a gun, you know, we've moved so far beyond that that it's just, and, you know, with these drones, you have even less idea who's underneath you or what's, what's happening on the ground.
Yeah.
I think one of the main problems with this kind of technology as well is, like, it gets practiced in prisons and in other countries, and then it ends up you know, in some way, there will be domestic, they'll find domestic uses for these things. Like, mm-hmm. I'm thinking of things like, you know, this, the proliferation of CCTV cameras and surveillance, and, you know, this will allow police to, you know, survey many places at once. Then you see the same sort of technology used in other places, and it just becomes this sort of, how'd you say, militarization of daily life in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of our strongest motivations for being at creating the noise demo at the on Monday is this. I think the Peter Luff, who's the new minister, the Minister of Defence, who took over from Fox, he quoted recently that the Britain have paid, they're going to pay $800 to $1,000 million on a Watch Creeper program of 54 drones that Thales, this French company, and Elbit, an Israeli company, are building mainly in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
But they delayed, as usual, and of course these companies will be paid for. They're changing the specifications so they can be used in civilian airspace. And the technology isn't there yet, because they have to be able to, the plane itself has to be able to sense another airplane and then take avoiding action.
Right.
And they have to be able to convince the Civil Aviation Authority that this will work and work properly, otherwise they'll be up there and potentially crashing into, you know, civilian airplanes, which is why we haven't seen them being used yet.
Yeah.
I think... One of the police forces, I think Merseyside bought two or three, you know, a number of years ago, but sold them again because they weren't allowed to use them effectively, really. So
they're trying.
Yeah, it's on its way. Yeah, definitely.
And so, can you tell us a bit about the demo?
The demo itself was we'd obviously been publicising as much as we can. And Bristol Against Arms Trade, we even had a billboard. We paid for in St. Werburgh's.
Yes, I saw that. At first, I thought I just cycled past it and I was like, "Is that a spoof? Like, is that a real ad? Like, you know, it was seemed like legit." I was like, "Wow."
Yeah,
it was like actual billboard. Yeah.
I mean, there's always lessons to be learned in everything, and we did learn, I think, from that we would have. When you look at billboards, you'll see the messages are quite short and brief, really. And there's a lot of branding processes going on, and subliminal messages. We had a lot of text, which isn't very good for car drivers to see, because they'd have to be pulled up at the roundabout where it was and view it for, well, more seconds than probably they were stopping at the roundabout. But I mean, we've learned from that, and it's certainly, I mean, it was good.
I
good
think
thing to have done.
Turned a lot of heads.
Yeah,
for sure. And that's in a space where it's quite congested a lot of the time.
Yeah,
so, there's a lot. Like, people would have stopped. But I was just so surprised to see like an anti-drone thing publicised in a way that seemed like legitimate.
Thanks to Justin for that. He is a guy who has legitimately owns the, well, he's renting the billboard, and it was in between. Projects for him.
Yeah.
He usually rents it out to graffiti artists, I gather. So the drone billboard will be replaced by a graffiti artist.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But the demo itself was interesting. It was brilliant, and I'd the energy of the noise was, and everybody was having a great time.
Mm.
I think the people in the conference, it was very effective as well, because that particular building has single glazing.
Awesome.
So.
Yes.
A friend of mine had been in a training project herself about a year previously, and she said there was loud noises outside, disrupted it. And they got so upset, the organisers of the conference came out and complained, and other people were complaining about it. So, but it was very peaceful. Unfortunately, we did get in the media a lot, but it seemed to be focused on the so-called violence at the end. But it wasn't actually very
nasty.
Were you trying
to block people from going into the conference?
We did. Well, we had surrounded it, and they weren't very keen on coming out. Although a couple of sneaked out round a side door and were sort of escorted away by the police. Because there was a couple of... One of the big... somebody who was doing a talk there was from Northrop Grumman, and they are... They're about third in the league of military contractors.
Really?
They're one of the big ones in America. And I presume they didn't want to hang around and go off and do their other stuff. But is this and they were claiming, oh, it was all about civilian use. Maybe it was, but it was all militarisation, really, and this step towards surveillance, which is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's all money for the military.
Exactly right, and that's where we're getting money from and what money is going into. Like, of course, it's no one would believe some bullshit civilian line. Like, it's always for our safety, and war is for our safety, and protecting us from terrorism, all this sort of bullshit. Like,
I think the good thing to remember, if somebody says, well, there is an argument, there are civilian uses for these things, but I mean, a couple of years ago, and I've been trying to drag out some statistics, was 90% were being used for the military, and it will increase over the next decade. That's the forecast, up to maybe 20-30% civilian, but there will be predominantly military use for them.
I think I remember a long time ago I heard, like, I can't remember the exact numbers, but an interesting statistic, like, or interesting numbers and way of thinking about things, like, that, every year governments spend billions of pounds, billions of dollars on security and militarization and military and all these things, and yet at night, I can't remember what they said, but like X percent of people are afraid to walk within 5 miles of their house or something. And it's like, so how we actually define security and create security is very different, and obviously very gendered and very classed and very racialized and all these other things. So I think those are kind of and in the global spectrum we see that exacerbated even more, with who gets attacked by these things and how.
Obviously the American Global Project.
Their military spending.
Obama isn't much different from Bush if you look below the surface, and the drones have enabled him to pursue their agenda without having massive troop commitments and big gung-ho wars.
So what happened at the end of the day?
Well, the police decided in their wisdom, or they were so harassed by these organisers, that they wanted to push us away from the, as it's a pedestrianised road we were on that had two entrances, so the cars, it wasn't it was a road but not, didn't have cars on it, away from the building and back sort of round, all the way round the road, as they would have liked to just go all the way round and out the way of the building completely, but we weren't so keen on that, as we were having a good time and thought we were well within our rights to do what we were doing.
Sounds like it.
And then it became a lot of pushing and shoving. Some people were arrested for assaulting police officers, but I think the essence of that was, well, somebody tried to prevent an arrest and touched a police officer. So it wasn't the use of violence was quite a wrong thing to be described that. But it got a bit argy-bargy in the end, and some people have been out of interest. A couple have been arrested for public nuisance, and which is a very old common law law. And it was actually for the law, the legal geeks, it was brought against, there was conspiracy to cause public nuisance for a group of people who were going to, they were a rising tide, or environmentalists, and they were going to block off the M1 at some point, a number of years ago. And they got caught before they actually did it, and all they had on them some banners and things. The judge threw it out of court because you have to prove that you're endangering life with this particular act. So we shall see where that goes with the two people who've got that.
Warmongers on one side. Anti-war folks on the other. Yeah, we'll see how that goes in the courts.
But I mean, it was a very successful day, I think. Got a lot of media coverage. I don't think we wouldn't want to get, it's a shame that the media seems to maybe it's reflecting the fascination of our society. People are fascinated with violence, really. I don't know what's missing, really. If we'd had a nice, and it would have been totally fluffy, as in, well, the police hadn't antagonised people or had their agenda, then whether it would have just us guys who knew about it sort of thing, and a little small quote in the Evening Post, but who knows.
And do people need additional support or anything like that, in terms of sort of legal costs or anything like that?
Well, one person's been fined already £150, pled guilty to, I think it was obstructing a police officer. It's on our Bristol Against Web, Bristol Against Arms Trade blog site, the actual details. And Bristol Defending Solidarity are doing a great work, and we're outside the Trinity Southmead police stations. And it's just fun. Well, it is fantastic to be an activist and know those folk are out there, really. I think it's been great. They've been supporting people, trying to connect up with people who've been arrested. Even though it's quite a small group of activists, there are always people who haven't experienced that before. It must be quite...
Oh, cool. Okay, great. Yeah, because they seem to be a good cross-section of different groups. So
there
a Palestinian group?
Palestine Solidarity Campaign got involved with Bristol Against Arms Trade and Stop the War Coalition.
Yeah.
Smash Edo were in appearance.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's been our goal as well, to sort of reach out a bit more, really, as well in terms of demographics in society and as well as outside the usual activist scene.
Yeah, cool, and it's good for those people to see that there are good support networks, like within activist communities, where people who get arrested, there's support and follow up, and it's not you against the police, and you get given your little bus card telling you not to talk or how to act and how to sort of save your ass a little bit, and so it's good, I think, to get that out, that there is like non-state support.
If you're interested in finding out more about Bristol Defendant Solidarity, if you just Google it, it should come up. But also, if you go on the ABC blog, which is bristolabc.wordpress.com, I think, you can go from there to get to the BDS page, get contact information and things if you need it.
We've written up a lot of what happened and about where you can make links to find out about drones, as well as. Our goal is to raise awareness of some militarisation, really, and go challenge some of those values, as well as, in particular, drones. So we're on bristolagainstarmstrade.wordpress.com, check it out.
Nice. Yeah. Wicked.
Nice one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So now we're going to go to a song by Spandau Ballet.
We are, for a particular reason.
Can you tell us all about it?
Yeah, this song is awesome because it's, like, a really good, like, motivating song. And I think that people who go, it's kind of dedicated, I guess, to people who are like out there going to demos, making noise, coming up against cops, fucking where you need to be. And there are lyrics in this song, and I will read them now, because people don't realise how cool this song is. Oh god, it's so cheesy, I can't. But basically you're gold, people who are out there coming up against cops and doing stuff and standing up for what you believe in and all those other cliches. So you people are gold, you're gold.
Sorry that the chairs are all warm. I left them here, I could have sworn. These are my salad days, slowly being eaten away. Just another play for today. Oh, but I'm proud of you, but I'm proud of you. Nothing left to make me feel small. Luck has left me standing so tall. You're
we're back, and that was Spandau Ballet. I hope you're all inspired and know that you're all gold. It's not just your mama saying that. So next we're going to go to an interview with Amy Miller from Wide Open Exposure about their new film called The Carbon Rush, which looks amazing, and it's all about carbon trading and why it's not so good. So check it out.
Great. So hello, and we're here with Radio Cavalli today. This is Centuria, and today we're talking with Amy Miller from Wide Open Exposure. So hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
And so I was wondering, you've just had this new film that's coming out called The Carbon Rush, and it talks about sort of carbon offsetting, carbon credits and things, and it takes us sort of around the world to meet people who are most impacted by what's going on with this. But without giving away the ending, can you tell us a bit about the film and carbon offsetting and why you chose to make this film?
Sure. The Carbon Rush is a global expose looking at the carbon offset projects that exist around the world and really trying to see what are the impacts on the communities that are directly at these projects. So how does it actually affect the people? Because for your listeners who may not be aware, but the carbon market, essentially what it is, it's this idea where, you know, polluters don't need to stop polluting at home. What they can do is they can buy carbon credits that are used in projects that have been deemed to reduce carbon emissions elsewhere. And so that idea that somewhere in the global south, in Brazil, in India, that there's projects there that are reducing carbon emissions, and so companies from the global north can buy these carbon credits to support these projects so that their pollution can continue. And so what's mainly missing from this analysis is looking at, well, what happens to the people on the ground there. And so in the film, we go from Brazil to India to Panama and Honduras, and we look at six different projects, and everything from monocrop eucalyptus plantations to large-scale windmill projects to hydroelectric dams, and we're really looking at incinerator projects, really big carbon offset projects that make up the bulk of what makes up the carbon offset market, and see how it impacts people on the ground.
What are some of the trends that you're sort of finding when you've been sort of going out and speaking to people about how these projects are affecting their lives?
Well, one of the main, themes that come up throughout the film is that essentially carbon markets can also be understood as one large land grab. Because what's happening is that you have lands that belong to indigenous people, where people had been living for, you know, generations on generations, whether it be farming, subsistence farming, or just basic subsistence living. And all of a sudden, without their consent, without their acknowledgement or inclusion, they find out that the land has been sold and converted to either a huge conservation project or that some sort of project would come and use this land, all in the name of green energy, reducing carbon emissions. So they're not sovereign over their own land, often their basic way of life has to shift considerably to accommodate these projects. So in areas, you know, in Brazil where you'd have cattle farming subsistence farming, well, all of a sudden, you know, with the implementation of large-scale monocrop eucalyptus plantations, that farming can no longer operate because the chemicals and the fertilizer that's used in the eucalyptus has completely destroyed the water. It's not unique, this idea that as soon as you start having projects and corporations that bring in hired guns to protect them, that there's also going to be violence. So that was another main trend that we saw, so the first one being is that people were no longer sovereign or in control of their own territory or land, and that the use of the land was being decided for them, others, in this profit-driven mechanism under the auspice of reducing carbon. But you also had, you know, increasing encroachment of so-called security brought in by these corporations, where they bring in private security guards, which, you know, inevitably will lead to a violence in these communities where, you know, you know, regular folks just trying to walk across the field or use what's now been designated as the company's land, and having the guards confront them and, you know, someone getting hurt or someone getting killed. And that, those kind of regular occurrences, that was something that we saw world over as well.
Wow, so it is definitely, while it's many different places, there's sort of very similar things happening to people all across the world.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that's the most disturbing is that it's all done in this messaging that this is going to, you know, be good for the environment. This is the solution that the world's come up with, so we can, you know, be saved from, I guess, unmitigated climate change. And it's really not bringing in the main factor, which is the people on the ground and how it affects them. And it's because it's also starting at a premise that I think it's pretty self-evident. I think we can ask any, you know, elementary school student what they think when you say you have a finite planet with finite resources, but you can continue to operate in a global economic system that hinges on, you know, working on an infinite amount of resources and, you know, infinite growth. And this is the issue of capitalism. If we're going to try to look at real solutions to reduce climate change and climate chaos, then it has to be starting on a premise that acknowledges industrial capitalism as one of the base core tenets that's bringing about this problem, rather than seeing it as the solution.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, definitely, especially to, I guess, our listeners of Radio Cabaret and things. I think we've talked a lot about on Radio Cabaret some of the hydraulic fracturing. We talked a lot about sort of Copenhagen and the counter conference that happened in Bolivia after the climate summit in Copenhagen and things like this about some of these issues and things. So, yes, it's quite great to have this movie come out to just be able to give people more information and sort of more... I don't like the word ammunition, but more help them fill out the argument a bit better as to why these things are problematic. And what I find sort of inspiring about at least the trailer that I've seen, because I haven't seen the full movie yet, but is the resistance from people around the world to what's going on, to capitalism, the destruction of Mother Earth and things, but also the sort of the independent media aspect of it and the fact that this film is getting sort of marginalized voices out there. So I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about how you go about doing that, how you got started, and what keeps you going with this kind of project.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been doing documentary now for 5 years, and I think it's not a unique story to say that documentary filmmaking is extremely challenging and difficult. It's certainly not an art medium that receives a lot of support, whether it be from the state institutions, and you, because of that, you know, it's a pretty narrow arena on how you can get the funds to be able to make a large-scale production, and you know, it's nothing new to know that corporate media isn't really interested in having stories be told that challenges, I guess, what's in their interest or in their advertisers' interest. But, you know, there are ways sometimes to squeak through. And so the Carbon Rush, you know, managed to be produced and financed really through some loopholes that I managed to find myself in, where it managed to get some financing through a Quebec, you know, youth grant that I was allowed to apply for some government grants. And from there, I managed to get the broadcaster to get on board, because there are subsidies for broadcasters when they take on funding point of view documentaries. And so it's like a good deal on their end. And Super Channel, my broadcaster, was, you know, very open to the subject matter and willing to give it a shot. And, you know, I was really lucky with that, because they're a broadcaster that wants actually feature films, kind of like the Movie Network, but for Canada. And so I was really lucky, and I found myself in this incredible situation where I wasn't actually having any censorship from my broadcasters, and I had managed to get the financial backing that I needed to be able to actually go and film it around the world. And because my background is as a social justice organizer involved in social movements, I have connections and links to people on the ground around who are working on these issues that are trying to bring about analysis and release campaigns to stop carbon offsets and to really kind of blow the roof off this idea that we can have capitalism be the solution when it's the problem. And so I found myself quite a few colleagues and a lot of affinity from different folks who were ready to help out and make sure that I could have access to people on the ground to talk to and hear their stories. And I think there was a lot of people that it became evident that the style of documentary I was trying to do was really give voice to people who are, you know, traditionally marginalized or aren't given space to speak for them, but rather have others speak for them. And so there was a lot of appreciation as well from the community itself. And building that trust and support really meant that I could do the kind of documentary that I wanted to see, which was, you know, giving the space to people directly impacted to tell their stories of how the carbon market's affecting them.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, it's wicked. And I saw sort of, I think, in one of the websites I was looking at, that there's another film called The Resistencia that's sort of in the process of doing some fundraising and getting, it's sort of getting together the money and just sort of getting together the film basically for this, basically to tell the story of farmers in Honduras and their struggle for land and sort of taking over plantations after the coup. I think it was in 2009 in Honduras. So could you tell us a bit about what's going on with that? How are things going for them in making that movie?
Sure, it would be my pleasure. So Resistencia is a documentary that's being directed by Jesse Friesen and come on board as one of the producers. There's himself and who are producing the film. And this is a documentary that's incredibly important because no one's done a documentary looking at what's been happening in Honduras since the coup d'etat in 2009. But more importantly, no one's been looking at the resistance movement, and there's been an incredibly strong resistance movement that's built up. Essentially, after the coup d'etat, there was a widespread national resistance that came about to try to reinstate the constitution and reinstate the president that had to flee in exile with the coup d'etat. And we saw various forms of direct action start taking place in Honduras, but one of the most exciting ones were the landless peasants who, in the Aguan Valley, which is one of the most fertile lands in the world, they started occupying literally hundreds of hectares of land. And it's been over 2 years now, and despite the tremendous violence that ensued, there's been over 50 Latinos that have been murdered. There's been a lot of death threats, kidnapped and beatings, but they continue to persevere and remain strong in the whole occupation, saying that they need to have access to land and have the ability to farm. And so Resistencia really looks at their struggle and gives their, you know, puts their voice center to hear what they decided to make those moves, what they're planning on doing, and how it's all come about. So it's really kind of not just a historical look, but it's also really linked into struggles of today that are happening around the world.
Oh, it's wicked. That sounds great. So people are encouraged to check that out. Before we wrap up, we just have a couple minutes, and I was wondering just how people can get in touch with you. Where can they go to watch the trailers? And you know, what has happened if somebody here wants to see it and have a movie showing? How can that happen?
Sure. Well, they can contact me at my website, at Wide Open Exposure, and there's all the contact information there. Regarding Resistencia, we're right now we've launched a campaign to finance the finishing of the film. And I'm really pleased that after 11 days, we've raised almost $11,000. And we have a goal of $1,000 to really make a solid, polished documentary to really be able to best tell the story of the Honduran resistance movement as possible. And so I would invite your listeners to check out resistenciathefilm.com. And that'll take them to the campaign where they can see the trailer and everything about what we're doing to finish the film. And with the Carbon Rush, I mean, you really just have to type it into Google and you'll be taken to the website. The people are invited to get in touch if they're interested in organizing screenings. We're hopefully going to be in Europe in the fall doing screenings. So that would be wonderful if your listeners were interested in either Resistencia or the Carbon Rush.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well, thanks a lot for taking the time to speak to us today, and we look forward to checking that all out soon.
So much for having me.
Cool. Great. So now we're going to go to a song. It's called Who Bombed Judy Berry, and it is by Daryl Cherney. It's, like, admittedly way cheesy in places, and even some of the politics sometimes, borderline. But it's a really good song. It stays stuck in my head every time I listen to it, and it's a good question, and there's actually a new movie that's just come out. Yeah, good question. And this new movie came out that just has just come out about it, and when Judy Berry got bombed by the state for her activism, her Earth First activism and stuff, way back now, she was in the car with another guy whose name I'm forgetting, but it's that other guy who's made this movie, so I think it's worth checking out.
Wow.
Yeah, so have a look.
And I believe as well that there is a picture about Judy Berry poster in this very social centre.
Oh, in the art exhibit, the Justice Art exhibit. So, dude, many ways you can find out more about this.
Yes.
Now Judy Berry is a wobbly organizer, a Mother Jones at the Georgia Pacific Mill. She fought for the sawmill workers hit by that PCB spill. T. Marshall Hunt's calling GP shots from Atlanta. Don Nelson sold in the Union long ago. Now they weren't gonna have no wobbly running their logging show. So they spewed out their hatred and they laid out their scam. Jerry Philbrick called for violence. Was no secret what they planned. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Berry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen her broken body? Or the spirit you can't kill? Now Judy Berry is a feminist organizer. Ain't no man gonna keep that woman down. She defended the abortion clinic in fascist Ukiah town. Calvary Baptist Church called for its masses. Camel buddies lined up in the pews. Now you can see all of their faces in the Ukiah Daily News. And they spewed out their hatred as Reverend Broyles laid out the scam. Bill Staley called for violence. Was no secret what they planned. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Berry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen your broken body? Or the spirit you can't kill? Barry is an Earth First organizer. The California redwoods are her home. Now she called for redwood summer, where the owl and the black bear roam. Charlie Hurwitz, he runs Maxam out of Houston. Harry Merlo runs LP from Portland town. They're the men they call King Timber. They know how to cut you down. And Shep Tucker spewed their hatred as Candy Boak laid out their scam. John Campbell called for violence, was no secret what they planned. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Barry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen her broken body? Or the spirit you can't kill? Now Judy Barry is the mother of two children. A pipe bomb went ripping through her womb. She cries in pain at night time in a woman's cabin room. FBI is back again with COINTELPRO. Richard Held is the man they know they trust, with Lieutenant Sims his henchman. It's a world of boom and bust, but we'll answer with nonviolence. For seeking justice is our plan, and we'll avenge our wounded comrade as we defend the rabbit's land. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Barry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen her broken body? Or the spirit you can't kill? Spirit you can't kill.
Great, so that was Who Bombed Judy Barry. I hope it doesn't stay stuck in your head quite as long as it has stayed stuck in mine, but whoa, has it ever. okay, great, so we're going to go to upcoming events.
Yeah, I think that's it. This cool. is a very short show, but sorry, yeah. I'm just like powering through everything.
Yeah.
I've
got some here.
You've got yours. Okay. Yeah, I added to the bottom of those. So
okay, should I just go through?
If you just go through this one. If there are events that you want to add as mm-hmm. well, because we just go through and say what's upcoming, so feel free to chime in. Mm-hmm.
Any meetings okay. or anything? Mm-hmm. So as usual, there's always going to be the Cabele brunches and dinners and things, which are amazing. So come and check those out. Brunch is on Saturday mornings and dinner's 6:30 on Sunday evenings. So come check that out. They're great, and also volunteers are always welcome as well. On April 12th, which is a Thursday, there's going to be a dinner at Cabele starting from 6:30, and at 7:30 is going to be the film NCIV with the director Frank, who's he's touring at the minute, so he's going to be going to come in and tell us all about it, and we're going to watch the film. And there's also going to be a letter writing to Earth Liberation and Animal Liberation prisoners that night. Promises to be good. On April 19th, there's going to be at 6:30 there's going to be a series of short films and discussion around anti-fascist resistance, and also it's a fundraiser for Nikita's family. To help cover all the costs they've incurred since he was murdered by the FASH recently, unfortunately. On April 26th, we're going to be screening If a Tree Falls, which is a film about the Earth Liberation Front, and there's going to be talk about security culture afterwards as well. So come and check that out. I believe dinner at 6:30. Dinner at 6:30, and film starting at 7:30. There's always more information on Bristol Indie Media and the Cabele Social Centre website, so check that out. We mentioned a bit earlier, on April 14th, Saturday, 1 p.m, there's going to be the March Against the Criminalisation of Squatting, so be there, be square. And, there's a couple other things. And also, so Smash Edo 2012 all summer, so, put this in your diaries. All summer, it's a summer of resistance to Smash Edo, so all out. For more information, you can check out smashedo.org.uk. So if you're at the Noise demo and you thought they suck, then check it out and see how you can plug in and get involved. This is giving you lots of notice. Bristol Punks Picket. Punk's Picnic, sorry. Friday the 15th of June, there's a bunch of bands, and it's a 3-day all over the whole weekend. So check it out, get involved, lots of punk stuff.
Goodness, yes.
Loads, too many to mention, but all kinds of different punk stuff, so check it out. I'm sure we'll mention it again. Reggae Sundays. So at the Red Lion, every Sunday is 6 p.m. to 12 a.m. There's going to be reggae. It's free entry. That's kind of cool.
Is that live?
It says DJs on there, so I don't think it's live. Yeah, but yeah, check it out if you fancy that. Bristol Against Racism presents on Saturday, April 21st, a whole bunch of different wicked sounding bands at the Croft in Stokes Croft. It's so fundraiser, so be there, be square. And it doesn't say who it's a fundraiser for, but I imagine it's an anti-racist gig, so hopefully that's good.
Yeah.
It's going to be the Oppressed, Oi Polloi, classic.
Yeah.
Short and Curlies, Defcon Zero, Bottle Job, Spanner, True Valiance,
yeah.
Grand Collapse, Criminal Minds, lots of bands, so definitely sounds interesting. Very excitedly for cake lovers, the vegan bake sale's happening Saturday, April 21st at the Arc Bar Cafe, which is 27 Broad Street, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's raising funds for Friend Animal Rescue in Kent, so it's organised by the Bark Collective. So,
and do you know, maybe, is that a vegan cafe there at the Arc Bar?
It is, yes.
Is it constantly vegan?
Yes.
And they're open all the time for food?
They're open from about 11 till 5. It's, I don't know the exact time, just rough.
Cafe.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I did not realise, I just discovered that. Like,
they had the centre pages of the Independent on Tuesday,
well,
I think. Yeah, I'd have to. Shane, who used to cook at Cabelli, involved with Bristol Animal Rights Collective, he's one of the main, or was one of the regular volunteers at the Art Bar. It's run by volunteers.
Oh, cool.
In the main.
Oh, yeah, I heard it was not for profit as well.
Yeah.
Nice. So definitely a space to check out.
I may go now. Yes.
Yes, and vegan cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I think there's also the.
Yes. Just come back to the GM action, which is on the 27th of May. Check out the Take Back the Flower website, which I haven't written down, I'm sorry. I think it's probably takebackflower.org.uk,
something like that.
Sorry, got that effect. I think people are organising transport. It's sort of outside of London that get involved if you want to get on that action. If you're anti your GM, which you should be, that will be really good.
I think that's it. I think we're going to wrap it up. We're going to go to Institutionalized by Suicidal Tendencies.
Sometimes I try to do things, and it just doesn't work out the way I want it to. I get real frustrated, and like, I try hard to do it, and I take my time, but it just doesn't work out the way I want it to. It's like I concentrate on real hard, but it just doesn't work out, and everything I do and everything I try, it never turns out. It's like, I need time to figure these things out, and there's always someone there going, hey Mike, you know, we've been noticing you've been having a lot of problems lately, you know? Maybe get away, and like, maybe you should talk about it, you'll feel a lot better. And I go, no, it's okay, you know, I'll figure it out. Just leave me alone. You know, I'm just working on myself. They go, well, you know, if you want to talk about it, I'll be here, you know. And you'll probably feel a lot better if you talk about it. If you want to talk about it. I go, no, I don't want to. I'm okay. I'll figure it out myself. But they just keep bugging me. They just keep bugging me. It feels on the side. It's got me. It's just like some kind of frame of my side. You will have it. It's in a frame of my side. I'm not crazy. Here's the design. The other one is crazy. Here's the design. You're trying to be crazy. They take me in and they do it because that's the only solution to get me in. But that's not the case, I'm the enemy myself. I was in my room and I was just like staring at the wall, thinking about everything. Sitting down, thinking about nothing. And then my mom came in and I didn't even know she was there. She called my name and I didn't hear her. Then she started screaming, Mike, Mike. And I go, what? What's the matter? She goes, what's the matter with you? I go, there's nothing wrong, Mom. She goes, don't tell me that. You're on drugs. I go, no, Mom. I'm
sorry, I'm okay, I'm just thinking, you know? Why don't you give me a Pepsi? She goes, no, you're on drugs. I go, Mom, I'm okay, I'm just thinking. She goes, no, you're not thinking, you're on drugs. Many people don't act that way. I go, Mom, just give me a Pepsi, please. All I want is a Pepsi. And she wouldn't give it to me. All I wanted was a Pepsi, just one Pepsi. And she wouldn't give it to me, just a Pepsi. I was sitting in my room, my mom and my dad came in. They pulled up the chair and they sat down. They go, Mike, we need to talk to you. I go, okay, what's the matter? They go, me and your mom, we noticed lately you've been having a lot of problems. And you've been going off for no reason. And we're afraid you're gonna hurt somebody. And we're afraid you're gonna hurt yourself. So we decided that it would be in your best interest if we put you somewhere where you can get the help that you need. And I go, wait, what are you talking about? We decided. My best interest? How do you know what my best interest is? How can you say what my best interest is? What are you trying to say? I'm crazy.